Hello and welcome to The Nod. Why do I always look at Anthony when we do this?
Just look down at your phone and don't
just
don't
read the
do
script,
anything.
Bowers.
Read the script.
Yeah.
Just be yourself.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, no, don't be yourself. Could that be awful?
Hello and welcome to The Nod, a mindful motorcycle podcast. As ever, supported by our great friends and sponsors, the British Motorcycle Insurance Community.
Woo!
The BMIC is a new digital insurance-led community building platform for the UK's motorcycle brands, communities, associations, and riders. BMIC connects riders directly with a regulated established insurer, eliminating intermediaries and pooling spending power to give back to its members in the form of lower premiums, better cover, and rewards. Visit the BMIC.co.uk to see how you and your motorcycle community can benefit.
I don't want a pickle, just want to ride on my motorcycle.
Something a little bit different this week on the podcast. We've got Anthony and Charlie here once again, but we're combining two of the great powerhouses of automotive podcasts and are joined by John Marker and Amy Haynes.
Yes.
Nee Shaw from Driven Chat.
Hey.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
How are you going?
Great to see you.
And you.
We've had a great chat.
Yes. Yeah. Well, oh, but I thought we haven't quite started yet, have we?
Yeah, but we're recording the outro, the intro once we've done it. So we can tell you now, listeners, this
it's
is a cracker.
Happened.
It's been a lot of fun. So sit comfortably. Grab a cup of tea
or two, or eight,
maybe a drink,
wine.
And get ready for this. John is a highly respected journalist, presenter, and producer of all things motoring related, and he's a lovely fella. And Amy is quite possibly the best photographer of people and vehicles on the planet.
It's very, very kind.
Do check out her Instagram, Amy.
Sure.
Oh, it's Amy Shaw Photography, sure, isn't it, yeah. Still? But your name's Amy Haynes. It's confusing, this whole married thing, isn't it? But she is, in my opinion, the best in the business at capturing people and their passion around motor vehicles. And you take nice pictures of cars and bikes too. And of me, which I maternally
that's what he's getting
for.
At. All those profile pictures of Mallet that you give him every year.
Literally how good she is that she can take a half
she's
decent
good
picture
at Photoshop,
of me.
Isn't she, really?
There's a great new tool called AI, which, I mean, doesn't want those.
Anyway, let's get into it.
Hello there and welcome to this week's Driven Chat podcast. My name is John Markar and I am sat beside...
Amy Haynes.
Amy Haynes.
I know, the shock face of Ben Bowers in front of me. I've known Amy Shaw for a long time and now Amy Haynes. Yes, hello.
It's very difficult, this, isn't it? Because I've known Amy professionally for coming up 3 years, but we've socially known each other for about 15 years and it's always been Amy Shaw and I still can't get out of my head. I changed your name on WhatsApp the
Did
other
you?
Day to Amy Haynes.
Feels weird saying it out my mouth as well. I've not got used to it.
Amy Haynes, artist formerly known as Amy Shaw, Amy Haynes. And this week on the podcast, as you've probably seen there from the title, we are joined by, but not just joined by, because this is a strange kind of collaborative episode where two podcasts come together. It's a crossover. We are joined by the gentleman from the Nod Pod, Charlie, Ben and Ant, currently sat in a beautiful, I'm going to call this drawing room, Charlie. We're in your house in the Surrey Hills. It's very beautiful.
Secret location.
Top secret location, somewhere in or around the Surrey Hills.
In Egypt.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for inviting us down, for being on our podcast. And in a strange way, thank you for having us on your podcast.
Yeah, you're very welcome. This is a weird, isn't it? Who owns this space right now? But you're very welcome on the Nod Pod. And it's great to be on Driven Chat as well.
Yeah.
And we're just going to see how this works. But I think it's going to be
fine.
We
both edit it in a different way. It'll be two separate
Absolutely.
Pods. It'll be the same pod, but it'll be different.
I think it will be quite nice to be able to get, because normally if you're presenting a podcast, people don't really get to know about the people who actually run them. So maybe we could do a bit of an interviewing of each other.
Yeah.
And what everybody actually does.
I feel this will end up like non-identical twins. Like you'll have your favourite that you want to hang out with and the other one's just kind of there, but very similar, but you don't really like them.
Yeah, I think that's fine. To point out, for our driven listeners, we perhaps predominantly usually focus on cars more than motorcycles. However, we do talk about motorcycles. We've had plenty of motorcycle-focused podcasts. So for those of you that aren't motorcycle riders, hopefully you'll put up with this and enjoy it regardless. You guys, your podcast is motorcycles, isn't it, predominantly?
Yeah, that for us is definitely the entry point. And hopefully your listeners will be converted to the ways of the motorcycle after hearing how amazing they are, maybe. but yeah, we use motorcycles as that qualifier, really. That's the entry point. But actually, we talk more about the doing, what motorcycling brings, the community, the experiences it gives you, the opportunities it provides. And sometimes we talk a lot about motorcycles. Sometimes we don't talk about them very much at all.
Great. That's a professional answer. We talk a load of shit and nonsense. It's usually taking a mickey out of each other.
Some of us. But, you know, when people talk about mindfulness and mental health and all this kind of stuff nowadays, and then people now say that if you ride horses or bicycles or motorcycles or drive a car or whatever it is, that's your escapism. So you're going off for a couple of hours on a motorcycle or a bicycle or whatever you choose to do, and that you can't think about anything else other than that. Yeah. And so that's your kind of escapism, or your reset your brain or your mind. And bizarrely, out of anybody who rides motorcycles, and if they've been riding motorcycles since they were very young, we've been doing mindfulness. Well, I've been doing mindfulness ever since I was 6 years old without even realizing it. So I think the podcast is a lot about that. We've had some interesting guests who've come from interesting backgrounds, who've had interesting challenges in their life. And part of their recovery is motorcycles. And I recently broke my legs quite badly. Mm. And my focus was always about eventually getting back on a motorbike and using that as a power to heal and to get better.
So was there a certain point where the three of you got together and thought, we've known each other for years, let's chat, what we chat about just together, we should chat and record this and see if anyone else would be interested? Was there a point where you kind of thought, cause Ben, you and I have spoken about podcasts for a long time, and I know this has been something you've discussed with me for a while. So is there a point you thought, actually, I'm going to bring in my two mates here and we'll start actually making this a thing? What was that tip over point?
Yeah, it was very much an idea that I'd, as you said, that I'd had and been wanting to do, to start a podcast and do more presenting work off everything that I'd done previously in my roles at Movember and speaking to the media and doing things like that. So it was something I was keen to explore. And my passions are motorbikes and mental health from my own personal experiences. So I wanted to find a way that we could bring those together in a way that was really impactful and entertaining. So not just creating a mental health podcast, because there's millions of those, but creating a podcast that used motorbikes to say as that entry point. Motorbikes are this wonderful thing that brings people together, regardless of their creed, colour, background, social status. Like, if you ride a bike, you're in the gang, right? That's why the pod's called The Knot, because it's that international acknowledgement of other riders. I don't know who you are, where you're from, but I'll acknowledge you because you're on a bike and you get it. You know the secret, right? You're in the club. So it's, how do we bring that together? And I thought, well, it needs to be, I hesitate using the word authentic because everyone bans that word around, but it needed to be delivered in a way that people could resonate with and made sense to them. And for me, that's through communication, conversation with mates. There's a lot of podcasts out there that are one-to-one, question, answer, and they're a bit monotonous sometimes, and you don't get a full feeling of people, and it doesn't necessarily reflect how we communicate, especially as men. And we have those shoulder-to-shoulder conversations in groups. So, well, let's create something that reflects that. So it was a case of, right, well, who's going to be good? Who's got a few stories to tell? And who's happy to talk about their emotions and their struggles as well? And having known Ant and Charlie for a long time, I knew they were two great guys to get involved. And also, Charlie's got a big name, so that helps bring the media and the publicity.
Really, I've never heard of him.
Yeah, well, it's funny because he self-promotes himself a lot. so it took a long time. COVID happened and, you know, everything got pretty hard. But then a few conversations with some passionate people at Motorcycle News to get behind us and give us some support and a platform to launch with. And our current sponsors for season two, the British Motorcycle Insurance Community, shameless plug, have allowed us to, yeah, create this second season of the podcast. And I think we said it in the promo for season two, actually. From the first episode, the goal was to entertain people, talk about motorbikes, hang out with our mates, but also give people some tools and ways that they can help themselves if they're struggling, things that can resonate with. And from the get-go, our first guest was Damon Hill, and we instantly started getting messages from people. So we talked a lot about the loss of his father and grief. And a lot of people got in touch to say, that was really cool. Like, it resonated with me. I've lost my dad. I'd never really processed it. Just hearing someone like Damon talk about it really put it into context and allowed me a moment to stop and reflect. And it was really entertaining as well, because we heard about him racing bikes and the fact that George Harrison gave him a Ducati.
We didn't talk once about cars, did we? Really?
No, we didn't.
There's no Formula One in that episode at all, really.
Well, he raced motorcycles.
Yes,
at the beginning
right.
of his career, yeah. and was very successful. And
then his mother thought it was safer than racing motor cars.
Is that right?
Wow.
Well, at the time when her husband was racing, it was
probably was.
Very dangerous.
It was, yeah.
Formula One, much more than motorcycles.
Mm. Talking about starting our pod, me and Ben almost started.
That's right.
The you pod recorded a pilot with you with guys. Yeah. We were going to use the Driven Chat booth.
Yeah.
When you had the truck.
Yeah.
We were going to piggyback off of...
Weren't we playing with the idea of Ridden Chat?
Yeah, that yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, we were indeed. Yeah,
but we did. We recorded a pilot, which I have somewhere on a hard drive. How did you guys start your relationship together and your pod? Again, I mean, we were a bit of a lockdown project. The brand was founded. In fact, we'll mention Andy's name because Andy... For anyone that's been listening to our podcasts episodically from day one, and we've pretty much been going since July 2020, we've had one podcast every single week. So we're up to over 170 episodes now, 160, I should say. So quite a lot. Andy and I had worked together years ago on an old radio show. I'd gone in and been a bit of a sidekick, Simon, with Andy on talk radio. I'd known Amy. We'd known each other just through general social circles in and around cars since, I tried to think, 2011, 12, a long time ago. So we'd always been on each other's radar, Amy and I. Andy and I had done some work together. Then we kind of lost connection. Our work thing stopped. I was running an events and hospitality company right up until the pandemic, which of course didn't go down very well. I was organizing classic car tours all over the world, and that really suffered. Amy, of course, fantastic photographer.
Yeah, but I tend to photograph cars around the world. And so when the world shut down, I had nothing to do. So when I got a phone call from Andy saying, hey, do you want to come and chat about cars on a podcast with John Markar and we'll go and drive some fun things? I thought, well, that sounds like fun. I haven't got anything else to do at the minute, so why not?
That was pretty much it. Yeah, I was twiddling my thumbs furloughed. Amy twiddling her thumbs. Andy had just started this brand with a couple of guys who had the idea of pushing a media company as part of their activities in the automotive space. That's a big company called Paramex, and it's still going. And whilst Andy's moved on, he's gone off to do bigger and better things. But Amy and I are still at it. We've got additional members to the team. We've got a Miles Lacey. We've got a Rachel Downey as well, both who bring different aspects to the podcast. Miles is a professional racing driver, so he often comes in to talk on that angle. Rachel's a bit more kind of motorsport journalist, so she brings in that angle. I'm just a massive nerd, and Amy takes a bloody good photo. And somehow we all complement each other in this bizarre world of cars and motorbikes and travel and conversation.
Yeah.
Your podcast sounds like it comes from such a beautiful, heartfelt place, whereas ours has kind of come from...
We're like bored people.
Yeah, we're bored and let's have fun. So.
Well, that's where all the best ideas come from, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. Yes. So
it's one of these misnomers in the world that, same with influencers, isn't it? Like, anybody can start a podcast. Because all you need is a microphone and a laptop, and it doesn't have to be high production or anything. Anyone can just start talking and put it out there. But there's a lot of them out there, and some work and some don't, because actually what it comes down to is the people, the dynamics of the presenters, you know, what you're passionate about.
Sorry.
And
there's nothing to repeat.
Person has entered the chat.
But I suppose, the voice of God.
I suppose it's not so much about the presenters, really, is it? It's about the subject that you're tapping into, and if that captures people's minds,
you've definitely got to be a kind of people person. You have to bring that kind of energy and fun to it. You know what I mean? When we have guests on, I don't think we've had ever one guest on, even ones that we haven't really known, the three of us, we haven't kind of instantly just kind of got on and just, you know, had these swap of stories that are quite entertaining, you know?
Well, I think that's the great thing. And it's the thing that I reckon, if there's a soundbite for me on our podcast that I've used over 100 times, it's exactly this. And it's the thing that we're so lucky about, the thing that we it's so unusual about our industry. And when I say industry, I mean the automotive industry, is almost every single one of us is in it from an employment point of view because we like cars and motorcycles. And it is as simple as that. We could be a tire fitter at Quick Fit, or we could be the CEO of a international car manufacturer. We're there in our roles because ultimately we like cars and motorcycles. And that in itself gives such a great ability to open up conversation. And it's the same if you go to a supermarket to get your weekly shopping and you turn up in something interesting. If I go to my local M&S in my Z3N coupe and park up in a car park and somebody across the car park's got, I don't know, an old AMG Merc, the two of us will look at each other and go, aha, you're a car person. And he sees or she sees that I'm a car person. And it, ultimately, we could start having a conversation not knowing anything about each other other than the fact that we both like obscure 1990s performance cars. And that's enough, you know?
Yeah.
And now we have the ability to sit in a room like we are now, knowing that whilst we don't know the inner depths of each other and the way that our minds work and what our history is and our background is, we know that we're going to get on because ultimately we like cars and motorcycles. We like stuff with engines in it and we like going on adventures.
And if it wasn't for cars or motorcycles, none of us would be in this room together.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
You know, we wouldn't have met each other. We wouldn't be friends. Yeah. You know what I mean? We would have had different paths in life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a magical thing. It really is. Yeah.
So in terms of the people that you've interviewed, whenever you get people in, you must learn something from each one of them. Have any of them changed your perspective of the way you think about motorcycles or the life around motorcycles or the way you think about life as a whole? Because your chats are often quite deep as well. And you do get into that, as you just said about Damon Hill, that kind of inner workings that we might not always hear on a podcast where you might chat to promote your new book or your TV show, whatever it might be. You guys kind of get under the surface. There must be elements where you thought, actually, this chat's been quite amazing and I've taken away a lot more than I thought I was going to. Are there any chats that have stood out to you guys?
I think, well, with me and every chat, especially the last few, definitely, when guys open up, because I still struggle with opening up. And like we were talking on the last pod about, I've never really given myself credit for what I've done with my life. And I always feel like I'm watching it from afar and I just kind of like, Or sorry, that I'm in it and never take a step back and actually look at what I'm doing or what I've done. And when we sit down together and have these chats with whoever it is, you know, we get into these stories and I kind of take that step out of like my situation and kind of listen to what's going on in the conversation. And it always kind of sinks in and always takes something away. Whether I can't pinpoint what it is, but every chat we have, I'm just like, yeah, that's, you know what I mean? And I start thinking about how does that resonate with me and how can I implement that way of thinking or that way of dealing with something that I've been struggling with. Apart from doing the podcast, I just really enjoy hanging out with these two and just having a chat. So it kind of serves me and my mental health just coming here to chat with these guys, whether there's a microphone in front of us or not, you know?
Yeah. And that's kind of the whole point. That's what we would love, is that all of our audience, that they take some of that away with them, that not just the insights or the learnings from people that have been on the show, but more the example of just remember when you're hanging out with your mates, you can talk about this stuff. It's normal. It's absolutely fine. You know, we can talk about it. And that's kind of the big, you know, if we can do that, then that's pretty cool, pretty impactful thing to be able to do just by sitting in a room, having a laugh with some people. I think guest wise, it's interesting because the reason we're all together is we've kind of all been through stuff as well. We've all got our own learnings and we've kind of pushed through, whether that be cancer or serious accidents and recovery. We've kind of been through those journeys and taken a lot of those learnings on board personally. So for me, I've kind of in a pretty good place around how I manage my mental health, how I talk about this stuff openly. So it's not always a case that we'll speak to somebody and instantly I'll hear something and go, oh, I can use that. But actually, it's kind of there in the background and I'll remember conversations that have happened previously and think, you know, if at some point, you know, my dad's still alive, at some point he's going to die. And that interview with Damon will be in the back of my mind and I can pull that back out and then use it at that point. So I think just hearing about, knowing that these thoughts and experiences and emotions exist and people have them because they've been vocalized, whether you act upon it right there and then doesn't really matter, but the fact you've heard it makes you aware that it's there and you can then, when something happens to you, you can draw on it.
And understanding that everybody goes through this shit. You know, it's not just you. You know what I mean? You sit in your own head at home and you think, you know, I'm having a shit day or this is going wrong and I don't know how I'm going to move on past this. And you just like have these moments, but you just kind of go, hold on a minute, I'm not the only one. You know what I mean? You realize talking to all these people that we all struggle with the same shit. You know what I mean? Absolutely. It's just how we deal with
and
it.
And everyone has their own interpretation and way of processing and dealing and coping. And for some people, it may be a fairly quick process of, right, I need to address this and fix it and I'll do it now. Other people will look at difficult situations in life and go, I know this needs to be fixed. I don't know quite how to do it right now, so maybe I'll come back to it in the future. Others will think it's fixed and then realize 20 years later that it's never been fixed. And I think it's, again, the importance of these sort of conversations is, even if there's the way I often think about it, when our conversations, we don't openly go into, we don't aim for the kind of mental health angle, but it often happens just as a result of conversations. But I love the idea that even if just one person listens out of the, say, 10,000 that download this week, if one person listens and goes, oh, I hadn't thought of it like that, or yeah, you know, then that's all it needs to be, because that may then cause that lovely ripple effect for them to start talking to somebody else, and that may help somebody else, and there's a lovely knock-on effect. And I think we as humans, we're such beautifully complex creatures, and we often try to think we know how it all works and we know how we work as individuals, but the reality is we're always learning all the time.
And when you get that message from someone that's just listened to the pod and they kind of open up and just say, you know, how much that actually helped them. Uh-huh. The gravitas of the moment kind of hits you and you're like, wow, that's really cool. You know what I mean? Yeah. We get so many of them, you know what I mean? Pretty much 99% of the comments and stuff we get about the pod are all people that have, you know, it's touched in a certain way. It's not like, oh, great pod.
We get plenty of that too.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But
and the old people don't like it, which is fine. You know, that's cool too.
Yeah.
But it's, I think in a world where everyone's trying to knock each other down, just having a bit of time just to support and be kind and show humanity is a blessing to be able to do it, really, isn't it? But, you know, the big point is that The Nod is not a mental health podcast.
Mm.
It's a podcast about motorbikes, and it's about people, and it's about, you know, riding and all the amazing things that motorcycles do. And we go for rides with guests. We get to hang out. You know, we want to go and riding. We want to be out there. You know, that's where our passions are. But we just talk about this stuff normally because in the same context that we talk about the latest Norton V4, you know, that's a bike we want to have a conversation about. But meantime, we want to talk about the fact that actually I went for a ride last week because I was just a bit manic and struggling a bit. I just needed to clear my head. And that's normal. That's life, right? That's the reality of all of the things that we are.
What's great about season two, though, and because we've started riding with guests now.
Yeah.
So we were in the studio for season one, and season two, we've decided, okay, we're going to get some bikes and go for a ride with each guest before we, other than you guys, you know, it puts you in a great headspace as well. Cause like last week, it's quite a long drive for me, and I was just kind of not in a great headspace. As soon as I walked in the door, we start chatting, and then we go out and get on the bikes. We come back and the energy is completely shifted from, you know, when we were all sat in the kitchen talking about it, we went out and looked at the bikes. We come back from riding them. We're like, whoa, you're just kind of buzzing, you know?
Yeah.
It's just that shared experience, isn't it? You know, you've been out on the road, you've all scared yourself a little bit.
I wrote an article for, it might have even been MCN actually, or something similar. I wrote it whilst I was on one of the Mali rallies. And the way I worded it was talking about the shared suffering. Because some people say to me, you know, why on earth do you want to ride a motorcycle when it's really, really hot outside or when it's hammering it down with rain? And I'd written it after a day when we were all literally soaked to the skin from being out in the rain. And it was an idea of riding a bike is like shared suffering, in not just riding a bike, but also as you exactly what your podcast is all about, but also talking about your mental health and the way that you can all kind of band together from the common suffering, basically. And you think, why do you put yourself through it? And you think, well, it's literally so we can talk about it and all moan together and say, yeah, God, are you as wet as I am? And you pour out your boot of water and stuff. And but that is what you actually enjoy. And you band together, not necessarily from just purely, this is amazing, we all have fun, but also, so this is a really, not crap, but we're all kind of cold and wet and damp and just want to get some food now. And which is something I don't think many people can, there's not many hobbies where you all suffer together, basically. Yeah. I suppose sports to an extent, where you'd be suffering, but I mean, if somebody said, do you want to run a marathon together or do you want to ride a motorbike? I'd be like, what's the next question?
Yeah.
We all know the answer to that, really.
Put me in the pouring rain on that motorcycle.
Yeah. Was that the year you tortured yourself by riding that BMW R18 as well?
Funnily enough, I'm about to torture myself again. The R18 gets delivered to me on Thursday.
Oh, no, you're doing it on the same bike.
On Saturday, we're starting to... I'm doing it with my dad, actually. So we're heading down together this weekend.
Great.
And I've, once again, got an R18. So I'm going to torture myself again.
Is that the new one?
Yeah.
Slightly.
Did you get one the bagger one?
So the one that I did a couple of years ago was with the full windscreen thing and the panniers. And
you had a radio.
Didn't have a radio. Do they all have reverse on gear on them?
Yeah, the R18s do, yeah.
So anyway, it was a heavy, big thing. And when you get to the foot hard knot pass, and I'm like, what on earth am I doing this for?
I couldn't believe you were riding it. Not because you can't ride, but just why would anybody ride it?
Well, there you go. That feeds into that kind of indulging in the misery slightly. I had a lovely moment not too long ago, and whilst it's not motorcycle related, it does have three wheels, so we're close. But I was driving the new Morgan Super 3 with a good friend of mine who happens to work for Morgan, but he's ex-army. And the two of us had this pre-production prototype. He invited me, said, look, we're doing this Hero Era rally from Bicester Heritage. Lovely drive around the Oxfordshire countryside and then back again. Are you up for it? And I said, yeah, okay, go for it. Hope it doesn't rain. That's kind of typical. Of course it did. It bucketed down and the car doesn't have a windscreen. And we're going along.
Or a
roof or anything, yeah. The two of us are going along, squinting our eyes, trying to battle through. And James, the friend of mine, James Griffin, he kind of leant across to me and he went, it's quite nice to be miserable once in a while, isn't it? And I kind of looked at him with this weird, peculiar look on my face, like, what on earth are you talking about? This is horrid. And then I really thought about what he said. And James is a fascinating guy. And as I say, he was a very, very good helicopter pilot in the British Army for many years and wound up in all sorts of weird and wonderful and sometimes quite scary places. He reminded me that, modern day life now, in comparison to his old profession, is really quite easy. It's quite comfortable, And we as humans, we're all guilty of this. We often try to find the comfy route. Amy and I could have ridden down today on a motorcycle. We chose not to because it's blisteringly hot outside and it is quite a long way to go. But we could have done, and it might have been a bit miserable, but maybe that would have been beneficial. But we do this. And anyway, the point I'm making is that often we have these little moments, these little reminders that life isn't always really comfortable and easy. And sometimes that's okay. And especially if you're in an environment like a Morgan Super 3 with no windscreen and you're getting rained on. Yes, it's miserable for that moment, but only for that moment. Later on, you're going to get home, you're going to be dry, and it's going to be great. And you'll look back on that as a hilarious memory that you've had. And I find this is such a common theme with motorcycles that people that don't ride motorcycles will never understand. Because, of course, if it pours down with rain when you're in your car, you put your windscreen wipers on and you maybe wind up the window and that's it. Yeah. When you're on a motorbike, it completely changes the dynamic of everything you're doing and the way that you ride and what you can see and what you feel and what you start to think about completely and utterly. And yeah, you get home, you finish your ride and you dry yourself off and you go, oof, that was a bit miserable, but glad I did it.
We're all talking here with our rides that we've gone maybe a week kind of thing. We're talking in the presence of Charlie here, who has probably suffered the most on a motorcycle over the many years. Can I ask, what was the most miserable that you have ever been on a motorcycle?
So often I say to someone I'm riding up to, and in Newcastle or, I don't know, wherever on the motorbike, and people go, why would you want to go that far on a motorbike? And I suppose my idea of a long distance is 4.5 months. But I think it's all relative as to what people's heart ache. It's a bit like I play golf a little bit as well. And if you go out and you start in the rain, then it's shit. But if you start whatever you're doing and it rains later, then it's okay. I think rain and cold is the worst. I think in Russia, I was with Ewan, I think on Long Way Round, and it was a particularly bad day. And it was sleet and it went on all day. And we were trying to get to a UNICEF project in Ukraine. And it was after Chernobyl. And we were visiting these families and they were all waiting for us and we had to get there. And we must have traveled for, 9-10 hours in this, just in the pissing rain. And by the time we got to this, thank God there was a hotel at the end because, we were going into a town to do this project. And I was never more grateful. Got into the hotel room and put the shower on. And I just stood in the shower for, I don't know, 20 minutes just trying to keep warm and then lay in bed shivering. But then, as you say, you guys were saying before that, you know, all the bad things you remember, if all the good things on a holiday or whatever, you never remember. And those endless days on the beach, they all blur into each other, don't you? But if you rented a car or whatever it was and you got a flat tire and you're in a dodgy part of town and you had to get yourselves out of it, that's what you remember.
And also that's what people want to hear. Nobody wants to hear about how amazing your holiday was. You want to hear about the things that went wrong and
Every time someone has a hard time or fails, or your friend has a little hard time or doesn't succeed, a little part of you is quite happy about that.
Or it's like someone that doesn't drink, and their stories always end with, and then I got home and went to bed. Yeah.
Yeah, life ultimately is about stories.
Yeah,
and the telling of those stories, whatever shape or form that takes. That's why we listen to music, because it's sort of the oldest form of storytelling. It's why we have poetry. It's why we have novelists. It's why we have television. It's why we have podcasts. Everything that people choose to consume is the consumption of the telling of stories. So creating your own stories is what life is all about, and there's nothing better. And, and that tends to come through adversity. And I think also that point, you know, scaring you. That's why motorbikes are great, right? Because every time you get on it, like, there's potentially you could die. They're dangerous things. Whether it's your fault or somebody else's, you've got to be careful out there. And typically, you will probably scare yourself at least once when riding a bike. And you put yourself in an uncomfortable position, whether it's too hot or too cold. You could take a car. But as you say, when life is so comfortable, just having that moment to remind yourself that actually it can be hard. And it can be challenging.
Experiences.
And you learn a lot from that, don't you? And it puts things in perspective for you as well.
And I think when you travel a lot, interesting, when you go through, and place I go through with Ewan in South America or Africa or Russia or wherever it is you're traveling through, I think your experience on a motorbike is very different to in a car.
Oh, yeah.
So when you arrive in a village in the middle of nowhere and it's dusty and stuff, and you stop and you ask for directions, or you ask if there's someone to buy some food or something like that, I think people are much more willing to help you because you're in their environment. So when you stop, you're dusty, it's hot, and they're more willing to help you. If you turn up in that same village on a Range Rover, you know, and you get out of your environment and wearing a pair of shorts and a t-shirt, and you've been sitting in the air conditioning all day, you know, people react very differently to you. And so I think your experience, you know, if you're traveling a long distance on a motorbike or a short journey on a motorbike, your experience is different. And even in this country, if you break down somewhere on a motorbike, guaranteed three or four people or even more will slow down, stop, thumbs up, are you okay, do you need some help? If you break down in a car, not a single fucker will help you.
It's so true.
Absolutely not.
I once broke down. We were in Biarritz. We were coming from San Sebastian back to Biarritz. We were at Wheels and Waves. And I was the back of the pack, and I was riding this old Moto Guzzi that a friend of mine had lent me. And the motor blew up we were all doing like 50 or 60 along the highway. And the thing started kind of acting funny, and I couldn't get up to the guy in front of me to tell him, hey, there's something wrong with the bike. And so I just kind of slowly drifted away from the pack, and everyone took off, and before they knew where I was by myself on the side of the road. And I wasn't on the side of the road for less than 5 minutes before some Spanish guy pulled over in a minivan, right? And he doesn't ride motorcycles. He ripped the back seats out of his van, put them sideways, and helped me lift this bike, put it in the back of his people carrier minivan, not like a van, and drove me all the way to the villa in Biarritz. And I was like, just, you know what I mean? Just people.
Well, there's a culture as well in Europe. You step outside of the UK, and in France, Italy, Spain, and Portugal, and parts of Europe, everybody rides a little moped.
Yes.
At the beginning, so from 15 or 16, I think it is.
You don't get a car, like you start on a
You get a little pedal and pop, one of those little pedal motorcycles, and you get your freedom, and you can go somewhere. And I think having that sort of slight motorcycle culture comes so that when you do start driving cars, I always feel much safer riding a motorcycle in Europe because the people are much more aware of you. And then, you know, as you come up, I've so often come up behind a motorbike, a car, in Europe, and they'll move
out the way. It happens more and more now here. When I first started riding motorbikes here, I don't know if you remember going through London, I would be going filtering through London, and taxi drivers and other people would move.
They'll try and take you out.
Block you. Yeah. So that you couldn't filter.
Yeah.
And, That's ridiculous.
They still do that in Canada.
Canada and the States, there isn't a culture of filtering, is there? So people, even though it's
Illegal. No, it's illegal.
Well, it's illegal in the States, isn't it? In most parts of the States. But even then, they still bar you because they don't.
They feel like they're losing the race.
They do.
It's a strange culture.
People get angry.
That's just about how they feel about themselves at that point, exactly. Isn't it?
It's that's what, like in Canada, last time I was back home, and in Ontario, they are by far the worst drivers in the world. You go to like Mumbai and they drive 10 times better than they do there. They have no lane discipline. They overtake on four lanes of motorway. They'll overtake. It's like wacky races. I was coming out of Toronto and I was going back towards home, and there's five lanes of traffic in it, on either side of the motorway, and it was just completely jam blocked. And so I'm filtering, doing about 20, and every single car, maybe bar one, either rolled their window down, called me a fucking prick or an asshole, or tried to spit on me, or they'd swerve into me and try to like knock me off my bike. And I was like, unbelievable. And then I got through the traffic, and then this guy in a BMW was at the front of the traffic jam. He sped up and chased me for about maybe 50 miles, just to get up beside. He had a kid in the car as well, just to get up beside me and start swearing at me even more. I'm like, what's wrong with you? And it's just because they're in this massive pickup truck or this car stuck in 4 hours of traffic, and they know I'm going to be home in 20 minutes.
I think nowadays, you know, driving in the UK is much better. I mean, much, much better. Certainly riding the last number of years is really, it has changed.
Just riding here this morning, I was just coming through sort of Godalming Way, and it was a very long straight, and I came up behind a little car. It's probably a Peugeot or something. And the guy was, as I came up behind him, not particularly fast, he was already, he quite a long way behind, he'd seen me and moved over to the side. And as I came up behind him, he indicated left. There was no left turn. I could see there was no left turn. Just to say, I've seen you, you're good, go past. And I said, thank you, gave him way way through.
Someone did the left. And passed over, and there's another fucking car coming up.
I'm usually following on a little silly classic bike that's not been built very well, and then people move over left, slow down, and I'm like, no, I can't overtake you.
I don't ride my. I've got an old '59 Triumph, very nice. which Baron Speed Shop built for me, a very very pretty bike, but that bike has got very small drum brakes in the front. And, you know, with modern cars, it's really difficult to ride an old classic because everyone stops so quickly. And your bike just can't. Back in the day, it was fine. Probably had quite good brakes back in the day. But now, and so often I've come up by traffic lights or stopped traffic and I've had to come up beside them, and I'm just sitting beside them just going, all right. They're not knowing that I've almost run into the back of them. But it is very different now. You know, it's harder to ride classic bikes around the countryside now. And plus the fact the roads are so shit as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it is different. Goodness. Yeah.
You're constantly watching the tarmac to see where the potholes are, where the gravel is, and you're just trying to avoid
it. And it's really difficult. Like, we were riding last week through around here. The roads are beautiful. Like, the scenery is absolutely beautiful, but the roads are shocking. And not only that, but you've got all the sun coming through the trees, and it just keeps batting off your eyes. So you're constantly blind, so you don't see the pothole. Unless someone in front of us, we all had comms on, someone out front is like, oh, there's a pothole here.
It wasn't even that. All of a sudden, you just hear someone go, yeah. You're like, pothole.
Raise myself out of the saddle.
But those are the nice challenges, aren't they? I quite like
that. I prefer no challenges myself. on the tarmac.
Big one the other day, came back with my Ducati Desert X, having just had its first service. And it was like, you know, freedom. You know, that first 600 miles is painful. And I came back through the dappled, narrow lane and came into this little dip. And fuck me, my back end just washed out
unbelievably, and it was a lot of sand, and then the front dug in and washed out as well. I mean, you know, you get those little scares and you usually just carry on. This one I had to stop.
Oh, really? That
Really bad. Wow. And I went, turned around, I went back, and you could see all the sand marks from the back wheel
pushed
washing
away.
Out and the front wheel trying to wash under. And then this massive black line that where the tires had
picked up
grip and somehow saved me. I just thought, as I was going through this flipping and being almost thrown off the bike, I was thinking, I've only done 10 miles since I've done this in, and now I'm going to have to pick up the pieces.
If you were on a classic bike, you would have been in the
I don't think I'd be going that fast.
I think it was, do you think it was your experience riding the Dakar Rally that saved you?
Oh, did we? I thought we weren't going to mention that. The Dakar Rally in 2006.
It wouldn't be an episode.
You pulled
the
scab off it, mate.
Without it, yeah. It probably was that muscle memory of
the boys are just so upset that they haven't done it themselves.
Yeah, hey, look, I've led you into that one. You're welcome.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
How do you guys feel? So I'm always interested, especially Surrey around here. There's loads of really nice cars. I've just moved away. I used to live a mile away from the McLaren factory.
Uh-huh.
So like. Nice cars to a penny. These roads around here everywhere in the country is busy these days.
Yeah.
We ride bikes predominantly to go out and have fun. But you guys, driven is a car thing. So a lot of your guests are driving cars around the UK, powerful cars, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, all sorts of exotic stuff, I'm sure.
Mm.
But it's so busy. I always think it'd be really frustrating to have a really nice car and try and drive it in this country because you just get stuck,
especially on a Sunday,
everyone.
On a nice day like this.
Yeah.
When it comes down to supercars, I think I would probably have that frustration. But I mean, even when you're driving around classic cars as well, you do get stuck behind some people. You're just like, why are you on the road still? Like, you have no, you're so bad at this. Just get a bus. I did a rally a couple of weeks ago with my husband, and we were driving. Well, it's I was driving a 1953 Jaguar Mark 7, and this is a boat of a car, and it's on drums, I think, all around. And you've just got to think, sorry, it's similar to riding classic bikes, you've got to think so far back, and you're looking four or five cars ahead rather than just one or two ahead of you. And the traffic isn't horrendous as long as you can think that far forwards. But if you were tired, or if it was, you know, somebody suddenly breaks in front of you, you just think, bloody hell, I would not. You're constantly having to give such a distance. And then my husband's not the greatest at direction. So when I'm trying to turn this near 1.7 ton boat
on
wheels.
Can say that when he's not here. I get the feeling that you're not good at listening to instruction. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Well,
I'm just throwing it out
there. We started off the rally, and as I was signing up for this rally, I was like, you know what? I don't want to be the traditional, the husband drives, the wife navigates, because we swapped over after the halfway point. And we did know that we are both better at it. I hate to admit it, he is a better driver a little bit at driving properly classic cars, but I'm a much better navigator, I will admit. And I think he would also admit that as well. But I thought, you know, I'm going to start up. I'm going to drive. You can navigate. And then this is our first proper rally we'd ever done. And so we had the bloody dog in the back as well. And so she was like, okay, I'm chill. But it was wonderful to have, again, that sense of community as you're all driving these classic, silly classic cars. But all the idea of it was that each car, the collective age couldn't be more than 70, I think it was. So everyone had to be fairly young or have someone quite young in the car as well. So that was something that you didn't quite experience. Because it's the other thing about riding bikes as well. Like, if I'll go for a ride with my dad, every year we'll do a 3 or 4 day ride together. And this is what we're doing, the Mallee Rally together. And but we don't actually talk until we get to the evening, when we actually kind of say, oh, how was that? Did you see me have a bit of a skiddy? And that was a bit scary, or whatever. And then you're like, hey, I caught that diesel as well, whatever. You don't actually talk until you're actually stopped and you band together at the end. Whereas when you're in a car together and you're on a road trip for hours, you're with that person for like a long time. Even to the point of coming down today, for the last 2 hours, I've spoken to you, John, about all of the things I didn't mean to talk about.
We had a full-on therapy session the whole drive down.
It's
fantastic. But it's great because,
But the great thing about riding motorcycles is that, you know, I think people always ask you and I, you know, after 3 months, what did you guys talk about?
Of course.
You know, so, well, the great thing was that, you know, neither of us, you know, we were on our own bikes during the day, so we were in our own heads.
Did you
during
have,
the day.
Could you communicate? Were you on?
No, the last one we communicated a lot,
mm-hmm.
but on the other two, we didn't. But
And then people, well, what would you talk about? Because you're both going down the same road and stuff. But you touched upon this just now. But I think you, by the time you get to the end of the day and you're sitting there and you're camping and or doing whatever you're doing, you know, you start talking about the day and saying, well, did you see that waterfall? Or did you see this? Or did you see that person? And you might not have seen that. But then they said, yeah, but what about that lovely bit of river that you saw? Or, you know, so you, it's bizarrely, you go down the same stretch of road and you see totally different things. And it's always reminded me of when I did the Dakar Rally.
Sorry. I did the Dakar Rally. Sorry.
I knew this was a segue.
I've seen a bell somewhere in here. Can we just ding the bell?
Just ding the bell. But actually, on top of that tequila bottle there, there's a bell. But and I noticed, and it really reminded me of Yun and I's, of our experience when you're reading a road book for the first time that someone else has written. Mm. You have to get into their head of how they look at the road, because if all five of us went down that first sort of a stretch of 3 miles of road, and we all wrote a road book of that 3 mile stretch, you know, we'd all write it differently, and we'd all see it differently. And the biggest issue in the Dakar Rally is to understand how that person thinks. What I'm trying to say is that we can all, that's a great thing about having these experiences of traveling together, but you all see it totally differently, and you see things that make you laugh more than others, and you know, and it's quite nice. That feeling.
One of the things I like to explore with that, I've only a couple of times in my life actually experienced riding in a group with the ability to communicate with others. For me, riding is very much a solo thing. I don't have, believe it or not, I don't actually have that many friends that ride motorcycles as well, like close friends. So I've got loads of car friends. We all do road trips all the time. But I have one close friend, Amy Haynes here, who's a friend who rides motorcycles. But otherwise, I'm very much on my own. So a lot of the times, adventure motorcycling for me or going on trips, I'm just doing it on my own in my own head. And I often think back to a conversation that Amy and I had with Jackie Furneaux and Elspeth Beard, both amazing, two amazing women that have both motorcycled around the world at different stages in their life. And one of the really poignant points that we got out of both of them was the moment of the discussion of almost like self-therapy, when you're thinking all you've got in your head, especially if you're on a long stretch of road, you motorcycle humming along, and all you've got is your own thoughts. And I often find it interesting, and I think we've touched on it a couple of times already in this conversation, is that ability to process things, a bit like you do in the shower. You stand there and all you've really got to focus on is the fact that you're in the shower. So you think about things that perhaps the rest of the day you wouldn't. And I find the same on motorcycles. So I'd be keen to explore with all of us around the table here, what is that internal dialogue that comes up, or monologue, or whatever it would be, as you're riding along most frequently? Is it processing time? Is it reflection time? Is it just thinking about the task in hand? Is it a bit of everything?
Yeah, I think for me, it's... I went through a period of listening to music when riding, and I think very quickly realised I wasn't actually listening to it, and it was just made, I couldn't hear so much, so gave up on that. For me, a lot of my riding is commuting, and it's in London, and it's a really dangerous place. Especially the way I ride. On the fringes of the speed limit. So that requires 100% focus and being present in the doing. And that is, for me, my mindfulness. Other people meditate. There's different ways that you can go for a walk. But for me, it's just, you take away all the other thoughts in your head, whatever's happened during the day, it's a reset. So you clear your mind completely and you just remove all of the clutter going on in your head, because you'll just focus. You're not thinking about anything other than, what am I doing? Left turn, mirrors, looking at people's eyes, people crossing roads, bikes, trucks, policemen, speed cameras. Like, the world is in sensory overload. But that part of your brain is dealing with that. And the other bit that just thinks about stress and worry is switched off for a bit. And that resets. So I get home or I get to work and I'm like, right, okay, I'm good. Like, clear head, ready to go, start the day.
Yeah.
But there's other times when sort of longer journeys, when you're on a motorway for 2 hours and you're just like, and then you really wish you did have some music to listen to. That's when you can your mind can start to wander a bit and you can start to process some thoughts. And a lot of what I do around my mental health is called push pause. I get very into things. I say yes to everything. My life gets very busy and I don't stop and think about the decisions I'm making, what impact they have. Are they the right things to do or not? Am I taking on too much? All of these things that start to overwhelm, and then you start to not think about the decisions you're making, you just make them, and then that has the potential to become destructive or descend into depression or whatever in my case. So having that time to stop and reflect on things where you have nothing else going on, you can just, again, some people just do it by sitting on a hillside or sitting in a dark room or whatever that is. For me, sitting on a motorbike for a long journey, I can start to think about where I am in life, what's going on, do I need to check in on myself, how am I feeling, is things getting too much, do I need to simplify life a bit? And this is the kind of stuff I've been doing the last couple of weeks, that it's been crazy and now it's just quietening down a bit. I'm not taking on more stuff because I'm like, it was just getting a bit out of control and you were starting to lose your mental health. You know, it was starting to deteriorate. So just wind it back in, and bikes do that for me as well. So I think it does, for me, it depends on circumstances and what the riding is, but any way of riding is a benefit, frankly.
I think I remember when I did the first trip with Ewan, and you know, we all lead such really busy lives. And I remember about, I don't know, 26, 27 years ago, I lost my sister to cancer. And she was very young. And and I just had a baby. So life was just getting, you know, was super busy. And then we eventually went off.
So you ran away. Yeah.
Well, no, it was six or 7 years later. And I suddenly had all this time. And it was funny. I was really starting to think about, you know, my sister, and then started to realize that in those 6 or 7 years that she'd been gone, I hadn't really had time to think about her because we had a baby, had a second baby, life and all that kind of stuff. And then I remember just sitting on the motorbike, and I remember just sort of all these memories coming back about her. And funny enough, all on all the trips I've done, I've always sort of had a bizarre feeling that she's been sort of sitting on my shoulder, mm-hmm. and mostly laughing at me. But it was lovely for the first time ever that you were allowed to have time to think about things that you don't normally. And then there was lots of things I thought about, you know, in school, and that things I'd done before that I maybe wasn't so nice to people, or was nice to people, or whatever. And it was a nice kind of way to be able to sort of, you know, think about the good and the bad of everything.
There's the other point of trips as well, things like the Malay rallies we go on, Woody, is for 6 days you're released of all of the commitments of life, paying bills, all that stuff, all those things that, you know, putting fuel in the car, like you're on this single linear journey of just getting from A to B, and all you need to worry about is staying upright, putting petrol in the tank, and having a good time. And that is a wonderfully liberating feeling. It's not 4.5 months, which must take on a whole world of different characteristics.
That can be overwhelming as well. And, you know, it's like all these things. But it's like in life, you know, I learned with doing the Dakar Rally or doing long way round, you know, you have these monumental things in life that you have to do. And I learned, you know, if you spend too much time looking at the whole picture, it becomes overwhelming, doesn't it? And you can't think through the trees, and you can't get your head around it. So I learned of doing those long journeys to break things up in life and just look at what you can do today, and that's all you can do, you know, is do what you as much as you can today, and then carry on doing it tomorrow, and so break it all down so that it's easy when life gets too difficult and too much goes on. Then, you know, by stopping and not looking at the whole picture and try to sort of break it down and say, well, let's just get through today. Mm-hmm. And then things don't seem so bad, you know.
And that is, you know, that is the reality of how most people will be counseled on dealing with
anything,
mental health or struggles in their life. It'd be, you know, break it down, small, achievable goals, because if you do think about life and what do I need to, you know, by the time I'm retiring, what do I need to have achieved? You're like, oh my God, that's like, how am I ever going to do that? But if I make the bed today, then I've achieved something, and that's a positive first step. And it's just having those small goals, breaking it down, not thinking too much about the future. I think
that's,
we live our lives a lot like that.
That's the way my brain works. I don't know why, but like when I'm not on a motorcycle, every day I'm thinking about tons of different things. I'm terrible at like writing down things and calendars, and I store everything in my head.
Yeah.
And I've got a bit of a shit memory. So I'm just like, I shouldn't do this. I've got diaries. I write stuff down, but then I lose the diary, or I can't figure out the calendar, or I delete it.
It's called Alzheimer's.
Yeah, yeah. Or dementia.
Early onset of dementia.
Yeah. So for me, when I ride a motorcycle, one, you know, especially lately in the last few years, I'll do a road trip, and that's completely different. But generally, I'll only take my motorcycle out. I don't commute on a motorcycle here in England. I used to, in Spain, I rode my motorcycle every day for 20 years. It was just like, so I commuted on it. I road tripped on it. I rode like an idiot. I raced it. I did everything on a motorcycle. But here, I spend most of my time in a car, unless it's days like today. I don't like to ride in the rain. So when I go out on a bike, I use my motorcycle to switch completely off, like Ben was saying, and I ride very spiritedly, let's say. So I like having to focus 100% of the task at hand. And if you don't, you know, there's the potential of you're going to die. So, you know what I mean? You have to be focused on everything, what's going on, the road, the cars, everybody around you. And when I get to shut my brain off, because my brain is just, I'm kind of manic inside my head all day long. And I just get on that bike and I'm just like, instantly switch off, and it's just a nice kind of like, I can't think of anything else.
It's like other noise than staying canceling headphones.
Exactly.
You switch it on, you get that.
Yeah, yeah.
Suddenly, like, oh, nice, good.
And then when I do longer trips, I try not to think about the normal stresses of what I think about daily, because usually if I'm on a trip, I'm usually with friends. I'm never doing a road trip by myself. You know what I mean? If I'm going, you know, I'm about to go 10 days through the north of Spain to the south of Spain with 25 of my mates. So we're with a bunch of mates. So it's, you know, I'll stay in, even if you're on like a long stretch of road where there's no corners or you have time to think, I always try to think of good memories or something that, you know, like I'll be with, you know, I'll think of, oh, what do I want to have a chat? I remembered this about something that I was doing with the guy I'm riding beside, or, you know, these positive kind of, keep myself in a really positive headspace. I don't want to start thinking about, oh, you know, I got to pay that bill and I forgot to do that and I got to email this person. I don't like to have those thoughts when I'm on my bike. So I try to keep it as lighthearted and positive, and just because for me, I like that. If you have a bad experience with something, it kind of leaves you with that, you know, that memory. So I always try to, for me, a bike is fun, exciting, good times. It's just, and I don't like to get, and that's probably why I don't like to commute in bad weather or whatever, yeah, or here in England, just because I don't want that negative, not negative, but I don't want that, you know, I want the motorcycle to be something exciting for me to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want to get on it, and it's just like my eyes light up, and the blood starts pumping. It's, you know.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a risk of having. I know what you mean. If you're not riding in the right mindset as well. Like I used to ride with somebody quite a lot who never made me feel good about how I rode, for example, and about how I felt about me. And it was always, oh, you know, you took that corner really badly, or you know, you're an idiot for doing that. And I'd come off a bike, and it took me. I still think I'm suffering from the way that person would talk to me about, yeah, how I'd ride a bike. And it's a point where you're trying to rebuild your confidence in yourself to be able to ride and think, actually, no, I'm doing this just for fun. It doesn't matter how fast I'm riding, or if I do cock up, as long as I don't kill myself, somebody else, or come off, then it's not bad if I'm not taking the bloody racing line or whatever, or I've taken a corner slowly.
It's all learning, right?
Exactly. And so even then, I don't actually think I was that bad. I just think it was overcritical, to,
yeah,
be honest.
Yeah.
But also when you're saying about staying in your own headspace, like I think it is something about motorcycling different to cars. Like if I'm on a long car journey on my own, and you don't have to be, it makes it sound like I don't think about when I'm driving. But when you are in a car, you can switch on cruise control, and usually on a motorway or something where you can just switch off a little
bit.
Yeah,
for sure.
It means that my thoughts are often a lot more negative in a car than they are on a motorcycle, because you're not going to be quite as involved, and it's, you're not thinking about the lighthearted kind of little bits as well. When the minute you start thinking about negative things, something distracts you, and you're like, oh, I'll stop thinking about whatever this negative thing is. So it's the mindset is very, very different, I think. And I love road tripping on my own totally, but only ever in a car. I think if I was to road trip on a motorcycle, it's a totally different way of thinking when you're with other people. I mean, John, you've done the exact same where you've road tripped bikes and cars. Yeah. Do you prefer being on your own or with people? And why?
I like the isolation of a road trip.
You mean selfish?
That stretch of time. Yeah.
I'm the same.
I like a stretch of time alone, knowing that when I get to my end destination or that hotel stop or whatever it is, you can then have that debrief, a bit like Charlie was saying with regards to riding in the day without the constant comms, but you get to the end of the day and you can recap on things. I really like my own time, my own space. I'm very much an introverted person, believe it or not, and I very much enjoy my own company. I'm not somebody that struggles to sit in silence or struggles to do stuff on my own. So for me, the adventure of driving on a road trip or riding on a motorcycle is actually quite cathartic when I do it alone, because for me, I'm like, oh, this is a bit of processing time. And that's where I go with that. In my helmet, I go into processing time where I think about things and process things. I'm a terrible overthinker. I overanalyze and overthink and overworry. And then for me, a stretch on a motorcycle or even a stretch in a fun car, perhaps without a stereo, I do the same. I just think about things and process things. So sometimes I'll end my journey not really knowing what I've processed. I can end a journey not really thinking, oh, I fixed that and I've addressed that and I've thought about that. It all just happens. And I finish a journey just feeling a little bit more relaxed because I know that I've given myself the opportunity to at least reflect on things, think about things, perhaps become a little bit more balanced. And that is invaluable to me. So, yeah, I don't know if I have a preference of, I love the idea of, and I love the reality of sharing an adventure with friends, but equally there's something very enjoyable about doing it at my own time in my own company. I don't feel I need to have other people, if that makes sense.
And that's one thing about the difference between cars and bikes, I find, is when I'm on the bike, I'm 100% focused on task at hand, especially if I'm riding at pace. But in a car, I do kind of like, if I get in my own head, you just kind of switch off. You got, cruise control on. You're kind of eating a sandwich. You're kind of paying attention to, some crazy car you've just seen. You know what I mean? It's just kind of, you go into autopilot yourself almost,
What goes on in his fucking head? Jesus Christ.
Well, that's why I either one, have to drive really fast just to kind of, and in my BM it's manual and it's kind of got no kind of assisted, nothing, and it's quite fun, and if I drive that quick, then I shut my headspace off and I don't wander off and I focus on what I'm doing. Or if I'm like this morning, I'm driving my mom's car and I've just, it's automatic, and so it's like it is literally just kind of a mode of transport, and you kind of shut off. So I listen to podcasts, and so I focus on a podcast, so I have something to think of while I'm driving, so I'm not in my own head thinking about things. Stupid shit.
But I think very much depends on what you're driving, isn't it? I mean, the only car I have is a van.
you have a Ford Jeep?
Transporter. I have a little, little Jeep that I knock around in, but that's just for local stuff. But
cars are easy.
But the van is fantastic. It's got adaptive cruise control. It's got all the everything you could possibly want. So it's a nice posh van. I did do the Mille. Mm-hmm. Is that how you pronounce it? Anyway, I did it for Jaguar, and then they were going to give me some other car, and they said, "Oh, you're not driving that car. You're driving this now." And it was a D-type Jaguar.
Oh, wow!
I jumped in with Steve Martin, and we did that. But that car, you can't think of anything.
You have to pay attention. Yeah,
I mean, anything. It had a racing clutch, so it was in or out, and there was no feathering. It was just a brutal thing to drive. And when you think about it, it still does 150 miles an hour.
Faster than that,
getting on for 180 miles an hour, and only four gears, and it was built,
to do one thing
a long time ago. In the 50s. And it was, it's a bit like when you fly in a helicopter, you press the shell of a helicopter, and it goes, de-doing. And the same with the D-type, it just goes, de-doing. So I think you get your stimulation from bikes or cars, but it's just how you and what you're driving, what you're riding.
They change the way you travel. I went up to Scotland a couple of weeks ago to run it to Glen Eagles for a funeral, and I drove there and back in a day. It's about 500 miles each way, and about, what was it, 13 and a half hours of driving.
That was a good idea.
Yeah, so I left at 3:30 in the morning. Funeral was at like 11 o'clock and or 12 o'clock, and then stayed and left.
Were you in a black suit?
I wasn't in a black suit. No, I was in a blue suit.
But you were in a suit. You drive there.
I drove up in a suit, yeah, because I wasn't sure whether I was going to run straight into the church or not. But I got there a bit early, so it was all fine. But then I was like, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to drive home. And left about 5 and got home just after 1. And just in the car, you know, cruise control, all the radars, all that stuff.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were on a bike.
No, I was in the car. Yeah, in the car. And it was fine. And Holly was like, oh, you don't drive home, you'll be tired. I was like, well, if I'm tired, I'll just stop. I'll get a motel on the side. It'll be fine. But actually, I felt fine because driving was just so easy because it was all just, I didn't have to, you know, it had
layers. You have to be in the mindset, right, don't you?
Because I couldn't have done that on a bike, though.
On another journey, you couldn't keep your eyes open. I was doing a speaking tour around the country a few years ago, and whenever I could, I'd drive home. And some nights you just, after the show, you know, midnight, drive home 2 or 3 hours, and it was easy. And other times you just, you know, you
there's nothing worse than like waning on a trail. Like when we were filming Goblin, sometimes we do like an 18-hour filming day in like Devon, and then I've got to drive to King's Lynn. It's 5.5 hours away to do a race, and I'm just like, and I'm on the road, and I'm in my van, and it's. But you're sitting there and you just kind of, nothing keeps you awake. You know what I mean? You pull over, you drink like 14 Red Bulls. I don't drink coffee. You know, I've had enough tea and Red Bull and nothing's working. Windows are wide open. Air conditioning's on. You're slapping yourself in the face. You've got music cranked right up and you're just like, it's just, you go through all these kind of crazy things in a car, like that you'd never think of on a bike, you know?
I don't think I've ever felt tired on a bike, actually. It's always only ever been in a car.
I've had terrible... Long.
Have you ever been close to having a little doze on a bike?
I've fallen asleep on a bike, yeah.
Wow. What's riding, wow.
And hit the curb and then woke up.
Cool, I bet that's...
It was my absolute amazing skill that kept me alive.
Was it skills you learned where? The Dakar Rally?
And, you know, globetrotting around the world.
You know. Life of a global adventurer.
Global adventurer. But there you go. Wow, guys, that was epic.
Has been quite epic, hasn't it? Yeah. I feel it's one of those ones where I feel like we've only just scratched the surface, and yet I feel like we've actually said quite a lot at the same time. It's an amazing thing, isn't it?
I also feel like I could sit here all day and chat to you guys. You know what I mean? It's just, I enjoy these chats. So, you know, these guys always want to end the pod. I'm like, no, we're just kind of, we dug in. We can do a 3-hour pod. No one cares.
There's only so much therapy we can support.
Yeah, it can take. Yeah, it just does my head in. Otherwise, it makes me worse.
Yeah. We'll need to go out on some motorcycles afterwards to decompress. Yeah.
Where can our listeners find you guys?
Go and just search for Driven Chat. We're kind of going through a bit of a rebrand, so we're trying to focus more on the word driven rather than chat. But both at the moment are live, so there is a chance that in the very near future we'll be the Driven Podcast rather than the Driven Chat Podcast, but we'll see. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, all podcast platforms, as you say, just search Driven Chat and it will come up. Driven.site is our website, and there we do more than just the podcast. The podcast is by far our biggest outlet, but we do also have written articles there. We have some beautiful photo galleries, many of which taken by Amy. We've got some automotive news stories, and just generally a kind of overview of everything we do can be seen at driven.site. Come along for the journey. Every single week it's a different conversation with somebody from the automotive world, and many of the conversations have little to no structure. It's myself and Amy, or myself and Miles, or myself and Rachel, or independently.
But it's always you.
Having a chat. It's mostly, I'll be honest, and with someone that suffers from catastrophic imposter syndrome, it's a bloody lot of me, and it is sometimes difficult to process. But yes, almost every episode, unfortunately, my voice is present. What I love is hearing from listeners that perhaps either haven't heard of the guest that we're talking to, or have no real interest in that field or that subject, but they're like, oh, that was interesting to learn about that and wasn't expecting that. And those are the ones I always really like, the ones that you think, oh, I didn't expect the conversation to go in that direction, but that's often what they do.
Yeah, it's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Just let it happen. Well, wonderful. Well,
it's beautiful talking to you, all of you guys, yeah, as always. Cool.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for having us.
And vice versa. Same to you.
I'm very British. Thank you. Thank you. Did you host or did I host? I don't know. But, right. Thank you, Eddie.
It's all just bugger off.
Get out of my house, John.
We'll just go into different rooms now and record the outros.
No. I'd like.
Did you want to?
I'd like these two to witness your intro.
Amy's literally just primed her camera to catch my awkwardness, so we can share it with the world like a funny colour of puce. Thank you for listening to The Nod, a mindful motorcycle podcast.
There it is.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. Do make sure you subscribe to get your alerts and then rate and share the show to help us grow. It's a good one, isn't it? I like that.
His is better than yours, sorry, John.
Yeah, you can have it. Steal it. You can also follow us on The Nod Pod on Instagram. Thanks to our friends and sponsors, as ever, the British Motorcycle Insurance Community. Do check them out online and join the community. Links in our bios on Insta. Oh, we've got a link tree. I've just put up a link tree on Instagram.
He's very proud of it.
Very, very proud of himself.
All there. It also links to Charlie Borman's YouTube channel. You're welcome, Charlie. Get you two more followers.
Not my
only. We'll be back next week with another guest. Oh, it's a good one. This was a good one, but next week's a good one too. They're all good. Join us next time. Until then, stay safe, be kind, and check in with a mate.